the dungeon, given the way I torture you.
There's one thing I did, which I have a tendency to do, which is not very nice, and I'm going to apologize for it, which is that I inverted the natural order of learning, especially with math, which is that I went, I went backwards. I really should have gone, often need to go from the concrete to the abstract. And for these Delaunay triangulations, really, I started over here, and I may have forgotten to tell you why Delaunay triangulations, why they're interesting, why we care about them, why are they the best triangulation of point set. And in a lot of sense, they are the best triangulation of point set. Let's see why. So, why Delaunay? First of all, before we can answer this question, we have to ask a better question, which is why triangulations? Now, this came up a little bit in a conversation we had at the beginning of a class. I'm not sure if it was technically before or after class started, but Marcello asked me, he said, if I'm looking at playing a computer game, and say it's a flight simulator, and there's some model of the Earth, that you're flying over. So there's mountains and stuff. There's some terrain. And that terrain is actually made up of polygons, right? It's actually triangles. And so there's a collection of triangles. It is a kind of triangulation. And one way you might get it, data like that is you'd start from something 2D, which is a map, and maybe if you have a grid of points, maybe a plane got these by flying over and using lasers to detect the elevations. And so you have a height for each of these points. And so one thing you can do is if you have a triangulation on the point set in the plane, when you take the heights now, you get this terrain in 3D. I'm not going to draw all of it. So this is a 2D picture. So the 2D triangulation gets lifted to a 3D terrain. And so now you can ask, well, what would make one triangulation better than another? Well, if there's an actual terrain, you would hope that the lifted triangulation actually looks like the terrain. But it might not. For instance, I can draw a triangle. I can take even a really nice nearly a grid of points, and I can draw a triangulation of it so that it's going to look really bad. Here's what I might do. I can draw, if I, for instance, include triangles that look like this, then I'm doing something wrong. It should be clear that this is just, a lot of these triangles are bad choices. Because somehow the edges are too long. We wanted the triangles to represent the local geometry, and if we have these long, skinny little triangles where I have an edge which passes by, you know, many other points, then it's not going to be, at least the intuition is, it's not going to be as faithful to the local geometry. And so if you want to pick a triangulation where all the triangles you have really are just the ones that you would hope would be there, the ones around the triangles around this vertex, for example, really are just the triangles that describe a nice round patch. If that's what you want, well, the Delaunay triangulation gets you a long way towards this. Because if you had a long edge like this, well, in order for that edge to appear in a Delaunay triangulation, there would have to be some ball that was empty of points that touched, that had those two endpoints on its boundary. That's a necessary and sufficient condition for an edge to appear in the Delaunay triangulation. And so if I had some edge that's really not connecting things locally, then there's going to be points which are inside any ball that circumscribes those two points. So in particular, there's no triangle with an empty circumball. So the empty circumball property, which I used as the first definition of the Delaunay triangulation, really does give you something like locality. And I'll put it in quotes here because it's not, this is not a technical term anymore. The empty circumball property is the mathematically defined property, the real fact of the Galois triangulation, but a consequence is that it seems to do better at locality. So that's why triangulations and kind of a, at least a hint at why Galois triangulations. There was this other aspect to it, though, was that this empty circumball property also gave us something like the local Galois condition. Okay, so the empty this is a really a global property. It says something about all for every triangle in there. For every this property says every triangle and circumball doesn't contain any of the other points, no matter where they are. But if we can check it by purely local means, just by checking each edge, because each edge gives us a pair of a set of 4 points, and we just check if that edge would be in the Galois triangulation of just those 4 points. So having this local condition also makes it algorithmically nice. It gives us a triangulation that's nice, easy to compute, which has some guaranteed global properties, one of them being this one, the other one being the max-min angle property. For this LIDAR terrain example, you can imagine if you really had a grid, you would want to connect the points up in a grid and then just cut each grid cell by a square. I'll just draw one for you. Each square triangles, and this would be a nice grid. There are cases where, many cases where the points that you have is not the complete grid, and the points have been moved, and you have denser points in some areas and other points, and you'd like to have something that's the most grid-like. So when I talk about locality, another way to think about it is it should look kind of like a grid. And again, you have to figure out what that means. There's some, sometimes the point set will be, you can make a point set so that every triangulation of it has some maybe long, skinny angles. And that's hard to deal with, but the other reason people care about this empty circumball property is that if you had a long, skinny triangle, like a really big angle, but it's still showed up in the Galois triangulation, it also gives you information about where you have a gap. So let's pretend for a second that I have some triangle over here that is Galois. That the fact that it's Galois tells me that actually there are no points in this area. Maybe I need to sample more points in this area, so maybe I'll add more points in here. So it tells me information about the relative locations of the points. And there's another huge reason for why Galois, which we will not do today, which is that it's dual to the Voronoi diagram. And anyone who teaches computational geometry has to make this choice. They have to decide, will they cover Galois triangulations first and then Voronoi diagrams, or Voronoi diagrams first and then Galois triangulations? I could have done it completely backwards and said, this is a Voronoi diagram, and then say, oh, if we dualize, we get this thing called the Galois triangulation. That way is maybe more in keeping with going from the concrete to the abstract, because the Voronoi diagram is makes a lot more sense to people at a concrete level. But for us, because we've just done convex hulls and in 2D, and Galois triangulation is actually an application of convex hulls in 3D, and of course this empty circumball property corresponds exactly to the in-circle predicates that we looked at. It seemed more natural to do it this way. But it will be the case that you'll want to go back after we do Voronoi diagrams and sort of revisit the whole thing. So, good. So let's continue with what we were doing before, which is analyzing the randomized incremental Delaunay triangulation algorithm. I'm going to call it Ri Delaunay P, where P is just a point set. And we're just working in R2. A variation of this algorithm actually works in higher dimensions as well. And it's not too hard to adapt it to higher dimensions. But for now, random incremental Delaunay looks like this. Step one, randomly order the points. I mentioned a couple ways to do this. I forgot to mention maybe the most important way for you to think about how to randomly order a set of points. Here's a way that works. It gives you the right distribution. That is the uniform distribution over all permutations. You just take a random point, let that one be first. Of all the points that are left, choose a random one of those uniformly, let that one be second. Of all that are left, you pick a random one, make that one third. And you repeat this process. Okay, the reason it's important, especially for now, it's going to come up in the analysis where we're going to have to reason about the next point in a permutation, and it's going to be useful for us to remember that that point was just taken uniformly from the points that were left. And that gives us the right distribution of permutations. Okay, so when I say randomly order the points, remember I'm saying over all the permutations of the points, uniformly pick one. So we have to initialize the triangulation data structure. Pick your favorite, let's say some half-edge structure. So the triangulation, we'll call it T. And we're going to do this for now with an infinite triangle. In the end, we'll just throw out those three vertices of the infinite triangle and any edges attached to it, and we'll just keep what's left. All right. The main loop, I equals 1 to n. Step one is, first we do the point location. So this is where we find the triangle. I'm going to put it in brackets here because it's the code we're actually going to implement. So find the triangle T in T containing PI. So it contains the I point. And then we're going to flip it to the line. So we keep track of which edges may be in need of flipping. We put them on something called the queue, which is a work queue. So we push three edges of T to, let's just call it WQ for the work queue. And now, while the work queue is not empty, we loop and we take E. We pop an edge off the queue if E is not locally Delaunay, which we know how to check with our in-circle tests. It takes us two in-circle tests. And on the next homework assignment, I'll ask you to prove that, in fact, it only takes one in-circle test. But if it's not locally Delaunay, we're going to do two things. First, we're just going to flip the edge. So I'll rewrite this like this. The triangulation becomes T, and we need to update the work queue. So we're going to add push edges of the new triangles to the work queue. And that is it. Now we'll just return T without the infinite triangle. Okay, so this was our randomizing Mount Moriah triangulation. It helps us have it all written out. This missing piece of finding the triangle that contains a particular point is called the point location work. And we want to know, we want to know how to do this, this query in expected log n time. So the total work is going to be n log n time. So what are we going to store? So for each triangle, we'll just at each step, at each triangle is going to know all the points that are contained in it. So this will actually be constant time to look this up, and then it will be when we do the flip, we're going to have to update all this point location work, and that's where we're going to introduce all the, that's when all the real work happens. So for each triangle, store the points in that triangle. So I'm going to use the term uninserted points. After r times through this loop, we've inserted r points, and then there's n minus r points that have not yet been inserted. So those are the uninserted points. So we store the uninserted points that are actually in that triangle, and then for each uninserted point, store the triangle that contains it. Okay, so we have links from the points to the triangles and the triangles to the points. Alright, a little bit of vocabulary. A point Q is inside the circumscribing wall of some triangle, we're going to say that Q encroaches that triangle. So it's not actually inside the triangle, but it's inside the circumwall of that triangle. So when we add Q, this triangle will no longer be DeLonge. If this was a DeLonge triangulation, after we insert Q, it's not going to be DeLonge anymore. So Q will kill this triangle. In fact, Q will kill only all and exactly the triangles that it encroaches. Say Q, let's give this a name, and encroach. Insert Q into a DeLonge triangulation, it will kill all the triangles that it encroaches, and every new triangle that's formed will have Q as one of its vertices. So in this case, say that this was the triangulation, there are three triangles here. Q, in fact, encroaches on all three of these circumballs. If we insert it, we will find that what Q has to be connected to here, 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 and here. So these triangles will go away. All of the new triangles have Q as a vertex. It's not too hard to see that that must be true, because if Q didn't encroach it, then it just is still there. And if Q encroaches it, there's a triangle that doesn't contain Q in the DeLonge triangulation afterwards. So it was it's DeLonge in this point set that contains Q. If I remove Q, that triangle is still DeLonge. So it must have already been in the triangulation. This is a very important idea. Call, and here's where I'm putting new in quotes again. It's the same new in quotes that I have over here. All new triangles after inserting Q contain Q as a vertex, or have Q as one of the three vertices. And remember, we use this idea to bound the total number of flips that happen in the algorithm. Because if running the algorithm forward was to take a random point that we haven't seen yet and insert it, running it backwards is take a random point among the ones we have and remove it. And so the number of triangles we have to create when we inserted Q is just two more than the number of triangles we destroyed. And so if we were to go backwards and remove Q, the total number of triangles in both cases is approximately the degree, plus or minus 3 or something. So that's the number of flips, and so we know that the average degree of the vertices in the planar graph is at most 6. So the expected number of flips we have to do is a constant. If we are going backwards, removing one, and it's the same as going forwards. So picking a random one, the expected number of flips is also a constant. So that's why this work here, if we don't consider the point location work, just the number of flips, you're only doing a linear amount of work. There's only a linear amount of change that happens in expectation, which is kind of surprising because it's a big gap between the n squared in the worst case and this linear expected case. Okay. We'd like the whole algorithm to run in linear time, but that's not going to happen. Keeping track of where the points are is going to take us on log n time. And we don't really expect to beat that. Part of the reason we don't expect to beat that is just like in 2D we saw the convex Hall algorithm, computing convex Hall in 2D has an n log n lower bound from sorting. 3D, you can construct examples, similar examples where you could, if you could compute convex Hall in 3D in faster than n log n time, then you could sort in faster than n log n time. And in fact, that lower bound we saw in 2D, how did we do it? We lifted it points on a line onto the parabola. So you can, that should at least give you a hint that the same kind of construction, which is lifting down points from 2D onto a paraboloid, taking their convex hull, and that's how you compute the Dolan triangulation, or one way, if you're not doing this, but that also has an n log n lower bound. So we don't really expect to beat n log n, but let's see that at least we get n log n in expectation when we do this in a random order. Alright, so let me note one thing here. There's two ways a triangle gets destroyed. Okay, the first way is just if it happens to be the triangle that contains the next point. If this is PI and we're in round I, this immediately gets split three ways. Did I remember to split three ways on there? Oh, I skipped a step. Someone should have caught this. Split the three ways. That's the first way it can be destroyed. And the second way a triangle can be destroyed is if it just gets flipped out of the triangulation. So something like, triangles gone, and I flip that edge. In fact, two triangles got destroyed here. One thing you may find interesting is that the intuition I gave you about what these flips mean in terms of lifting, remember I said you lift these four points up in 3D, and there's a top of the tetrahedron and a bottom of the tetrahedron. And the flip says you go from the top to the bottom. Well, if the points are not in convex position, like here, you lift up points to a tetrahedron, top of it is going to be, say, just a single triangle, and the bottom is going to be these three triangles. So you can view this three-way split as a different kind of flip. And so this is sometimes called 1-3 or 3-1 flips, depending on which direction you're going. And these are 2-2 flips. Right, where these numbers just indicate the number of triangles you have. And that geometric intuition is also how you can generalize this notion of a flip for a local change in the structure to higher dimensions as well. In 3D, you have to flip between, say, two tetrahedra glued together, flip into three tetrahedra glued along an edge. So there's a whole different set of flips in 3D. They're like 3-2 flips, 2-3 flips, 4-1 flips, 1-4 flips, and I think that's it. But this idea of just looking at either the top hull and the bottom hull of D plus 2 points lifted into D plus 1 dimensions is a total, complete generalization of flips. I mean, that was interesting to anyone. I hope so. We're not going to do that now. We'll stay down here in low dimensions where it's safe, and you can visualize it, I hope. All right. What is the point location work we have to do in these cases? So I said when we destroy a triangle, we have to do some point location work, and we're doing this in an eager way. There's also a lazy version of the point location work, which is where we would instead try to build a structure so that we could search and find the triangle containing P at the time we need it, but it's not going to do any better than just relocating all the points up front. So there were some points in here that got this, in this triangle that got destroyed. We know for this, what did we store? We stored for this triangle all the points that were inside. So we have a list of these points. And for each of these three points, we know they can only end up in one of three places. They can either end up here, here, or here, in one of these three triangles. And we can check that. That's these checking of the points in the triangle counts in time. Okay, so that's no problem, and the same is true here. These points, these two triangles got destroyed. We just go through the list and we relocate them. So that's the work we're going to do, and we want to count how much of that work we do over the course of the whole algorithm. And for this, I need a lot of words. Any questions? Does all make sense? I'm hesitant to erase this. You feel okay with me erasing this? You've got the algorithm down? Okay. It's gonna go. So there's some set of triangles that we see over the course of the algorithm. Remember we said, let me repeat this definition, the points we numbered P1 to Pn, we said that QR was points P1 all the way up to PR. And after R times through the main loop, we're looking at the Delaunay triangulation of QR. And the R plus 1 time through the loop, we're going to add one more point, namely point R, P, R plus 1. There's the total set of triangles that we see anywhere at any time during the course of this algorithm is going to be T. And so even ones that are formed and immediately flipped away, we count them. All triangles seen in the algorithm. And we can specify TR is the set of triangles in the Delaunay triangulation of QR. And TR set minus TR minus 1 is the what we've been calling the new triangles. So these are the new triangles formed in step in the R time fit loop. For a given triangle, we're going to let big K of that triangle, oh, T, be the, this is going to be the set of points that are inside the circumcircle of that triangle. So this is the set of points that encroach the triangle T. And we're going to say that has to be strictly interior. So the vertices of the triangle don't encroach the triangle itself. It won't actually affect our counts by much. So that means, in other words, Q in K of T implies that Q is in circumcircle. Some more definitions here. K, little k sub r of Q is defined to be the size, the numbers, the size of the set of all triangles in TR, such that Q is inside K. So, what is this? You pick a particular vertex Q and a particular time R. This is the number of triangles that Q encroaches. Very similar, but slightly different. KR prime of Q is going to be the number of triangles in TR set minus T. So it's the number of new triangles that Q encroaches. So regular KR is the number of Dewani triangles in the Dewani triangulation of QR, that's big QR, that this point encroaches. And this is the subset of them that are were just formed in step R. So let's establish some lemmas about these. The first and most important one is that the total point location work is big O of the sum for all T in sum over all the triangles we see of the size K. So here we saw that we were going to have to do some work for every triangle that's destroyed, and we know that we know that if a point encroaches on a triangle, then when it's inserted, it will have to be relocated. And if I limited myself to just the number of points in the triangles, instead of just this is in some sense an overcount. Because K of T is it's actually the number of points inside the circumcircle. So if it's inside the triangle, it's clearly inside the circumcircle. And we have to pay constant time for every point in every triangle.
What do you mean by total?
I'm sorry, this is the point location work.
So this is the number of relocations that happen. Sorry. Each time we have to change. So for instance, there's 5 points in here. We have to pay O of 5 time to put those points into the new triangles.
But we're not talking about those points, we're talking about the points that approach that triangle.
Yes, so how many points, let's see, so if I define k to be just the number of points in the triangle and not just encroaching the triangle, you'd believe that part, right? And so this is at least bigger than that. And it turns out this is an easier number to count. It's an easier number to bound. What's actually happening is that when I add a particular point.
Oh wait, encroaching it looks what's inside the frame?
Yeah.
Oh.
But when I add a point, you see, I'm only going to count after an entire round. And when I insert a point, it's going to kill all the triangles that it encroaches. So, I am going to have to pay for the number of all the triangles that it encroaches. Will all get destroyed, and then will require relocation work for all of them. So starting here, we want to define. Let's see, first the sum of all the triangles in TR minus T R minus 1. Of the size of T here. So if I just look at the new triangles, so this is the sum over all triangles, but if I just look at the new triangles formed in a particular round, this is equal to the sum over all Q in P set minus QR of K R prime of Q. So this was, remember, kr prime of q is the number of new triangles that q encroaches. This is what you might call a double counting argument. Here I'm saying for all the triangles, how many points encroach them. Here I'm saying for all the points, how many triangles do they encroach. And you should see that those are just counting the same thing. Okay, so we'll call this fact one. The next important fact we need is that the expectation now, remember QR is really a random variable. Depends on the ordering. It's the first R points given a particular ordering. So the expectation over all orderings of this sum Q in P minus QR of K R prime of Q. So the expected value of this thing, I claim, is less than or equal to the expected value of the sum of the same set of 3 over R times K R of Q. Okay. This is where we're going to use the fact that we uniformly, randomly ordered the points, because this is counting how many new triangles Q encroaches. If instead I look for each triangle that it encroaches total, see there's no prime here, the prime is the new ones. If I look at all of them, and I look at, they have 3 vertices, there's R total vertices, and there's a 3 in R chance that one of those 3 vertices was the vertex PR. Okay, so if you look at any set of R points, and they're randomly ordered, the probability that any one of them was the last one is 1 in R. So there's, since each triangle has 3 vertices, there's a 3 in R chance that it was one of the ones that was approached to. This is our fact 2. Fact 3 we're going to need is now that the expected value of KR of particular point PR plus 1 is equal to 1 over n minus r times the expected value of this. So q minus q. Again, I keep writing p minus qr. These are just the uninserted points. These are the points we haven't inserted yet. Kr q. Okay, the reason here is that for a particular point pr plus 1, it's going to be just the average, because any one of the n minus r points that are left is equally likely to be pr plus 1. Remember, that's one of the ways, that's the way we're going to think about choosing our random ordering. Since all of them have equal probability, this expectation is just the average, so it's 1 over n times the sum of what you would get for all of those. This is just something that's a definition of expectation, given that the distribution of PR plus 1 is uniform over the n minus r points and P minus r. That's fact 3. You can also just see that PKR of PR plus 1 is, for any fixed ordering, it's just the size of TR minus TR plus 1. Why is that? Because the points that PR plus 1 encroaches, or the triangles that it encroaches, are exactly the ones that are in TR, but no longer in TR plus 1. And here, this is equal to TR plus 1, the size of TR plus 1 minus TR. That's a little minus 2. Oops. That is, the number of triangles around the point Q after we insert it is 2 more than the number of triangles we killed. At first, right, we go from one triangle, we kill one triangle, we end up with 3. That means the number of triangles is going up by 2. And then every time we do a flip, the number of triangles stays the same, right? The number we kill, the number we create is equal to z. So we only get this change by 2.
4 here.
And the last thing is we can look at what the expected value of the size of TR plus 1 minus TR. Okay, again, this is just the number of expected number of new triangles in step R plus 1. It's going to be at most 6, just the degree. Because on average, we expect, if we picked a random point, to see 6 triangles around that point. So this is, okay, now we're going to put these all together to get a bound on the total work. We want to know what is the expected, this is expected total work. I hope that was clear. So the expectation over expected value of this sum of size, this is equal to the expected value of, well, I can break, instead of summing over all triangles, I can break it up into rounds. So there's going to be, n rounds, and each round there's going to be TRing triangles, so I can write this as the sum from R equals 1 to N, sum of T in TR minus T minus 1, of, again, the size of big K. So that's just breaking this sum up into pieces, and the this is equal to the sum from R equals 1 to N. By, first of all, by linearity of expectations, I can move this expectation inside the sum, and that this second sum we know something about from step one, right? The sum over just the new triangles is equal to this. Let's rewrite it then. So that's the sum of Q in of K R prime Q. Okay, so that's pi one here, and the linearity of expectations. Everyone following so far? So this, now if we apply fact 2, we can say we can upper bound this expectation with this one. So it's less than or equal to, again, sum R equals 1 to N of the expected value of 3 over R. Oops, I guess there's another sum in here. Q in okay, so we looked at the number of new triangles encroached by Q, and we see it's an expectation is 3 over R times the number of total triangles encroached by Q. Okay, so that was just applying fact 2 from over here. When we apply fact 3, we can replace this sum. I'm going to actually you notice it's part of it is here. So we want to get something in terms of just kr of pr plus 1. So this is equal to sum r equals 1 to n of 3. I'm going to pull the 3 over r out, and I have to multiply by n minus r. R times the expected value of kr. Okay, so we're almost there. We're going to take this because we know it's equal to something, a term that just looks like this. It's the number of new roughly the number of new triangles. So we swap out this with the expected number of new triangles. And this is then just this is 6, less than 6, less than 4. So this whole thing is less than 12 times the sum of r equals 1 to n of n minus r over r. This is down to something you should be able to compute. What's this sum? I'm going to shout it out. They go, I lost you guys, huh? This is just the sum of n minus, what, I mean, you can rewrite it. This is 12 times what? The sum of n over r minus 1, n of those. So it's just 12 times n. Sum of 1 of r equals 1 to n of 1 over r. minus n harmonic sequence. No, harmonic sequence is a log n. So this is O of n log n. We're done. Okay, it's tricky. As far as I know, it kind of has to be tricky. A lot of people look for simplified versions of this proof. And I confess that the first time I taught this course, I thought I found a nice, beautiful, shortest proof ever of this. It was wrong. There's probably some students running around if they know the right answer. Well, here's the intuition. You'd like to say that you could just do the same kind of backwards analysis that worked for the case where you just want to count the number of flips. So to count the number of flips, you just have to say, well, if I randomly remove one point, how many edges come out of that point tells me how many flips I had to do locally. And I know that since I randomly ordered them, I can just take any random point and the average degrees is what I expect to see. So you'd like to do this analysis directly by a backwards analysis. You see, the backwards analysis is hidden in this step. And you'd like to say, well, what would the point location work I have to do if I just remove a random point? And you'd like to say, what, that the total amount of work you have to do is like n minus r over r. So remove the point r, that you have to do something like n over r work. And that's not even true. It's true here, but in order to count it up that way, you would want to say that the expected amount of point location work was exactly n over r. And that you can't seem to do by a simple argument. This technique was generalized, so there's in fact all kinds of random algorithms that you can analyze by having some kind of notion of encroachment. By counting some set of things which block a certain certain structure from existing. So for a particular triangle to appear in the triangulation, it has to be not encroached. You can count the number of things which keep it from being encroached, and you can analyze other randomized algorithms, especially randomized incremental algorithms, by adaptations of the same. So the punchline, though, is that what is actually an n-squared algorithm, an expectation takes out my hand.
So I have a simple intuition why it's an algorithm.
Okay.
So basically, the work you do on the algorithm is every time you split the triangle, you have to go and match those points inside and reassign it to the triangle. So because they're random, you expect that they're divided like three ways. Like every sub-triangle gets one third of the points. So every time you touch a point, it ends up in a triangle with three times less points. So you cannot touch a point and go back until it becomes.
Right. So you'd like to say that the points get separated. So if you're doing this in 1D, you've studied this, I'm sure you've studied this in depth, right? Because this is how you do things like balanced binary search trees. If you split the points that, like in Quicksort, if you pick a pivot which puts roughly half the points on each side, you know you're only going to have log n depth. And the same thing is happening here, except that now you have to say that when I update the Deligne triangulation, all the points didn't still end up in the same triangle. And so Marius's intuition is right, that you'd like to say that every time I at a point that gives me a new partition, and that's a partition of space and not just a partition of the line, but you'd like that new partition to break apart the points into smaller groups. And so the bad examples, exactly the bad examples for orderings that don't work, don't do this. Right? Where all the points that are uninserted end up in the same triangle. Even if they all got moved, they all got moved to the same place. But if you're lucky, they get moved to separate places. Now it's not exactly this, because really what you want is not the triangles, but the Delaunay circumballs. So you'd like to say that they don't all land, they don't all still encroach the same triangles.
Yeah, I'm assuming the other part that number of clicks you have to do is constant, like the constant overhead.
Right.
So I'm just counting.
Yeah, so, yes, there it is. That would be the hardest thing we do this pass, maybe. Unless you guys just beg for more. Any other questions? Okay, see you next time.